Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chaplain Jason Phipps, and this is yet another episode of Legends Among Us, a podcast devoted to the troopers and veterans of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. And we have a great guest with us on today. If you're familiar with Brave Rifles Week and just some of the banner events that we do as an organization, one of the things that we highlight frequently is our Trooper of the Year. So with us today is Sergeant Justin Topel from Thunder Squadron, and he is our 2025 Trooper of the Year. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
With us. Yeah, this is great. And so we're just going to kind of talk a little bit through just how you ended up in this place. Who coerced you into like competing for that?
Sure.
Because there are other positions as well that were recognized during Brave Rifles Week.
Like for the competition that we did, they broke it down into four. There was like one for warrant officer, one for officer, NCO, and then junior enlisted.
Okay.
So at the time, I was still a specialist. So I did it for the junior enlisted.
Junior enlisted. Yeah. Okay. What I'm kind of curious about, I'm rabbit trailing here a little bit. We'll get back on track.
Sure.
What kind of rewards came as a result of being recognized as Junior Enlisted Trooper of the Year for 3CR?
Like at the end of Brave Rifles Week, and they presented all the awards to a bunch of different people. And that one in particular, I got the Private Alan Walker Award. That's what you get for the Junior Enlisted specifically for Trooper of the Year. So now there's a trophy with like a plaque and my name on it at regiment.
Have you seen that trophy? Because I've seen it.
I did get to hold it during okay. the ceremony. I haven't gone back to look in regiment, so it's on my list of things to do. Yeah, it'd definitely be cool to see it. Yeah.
Have you been regimental headquarters before?
Yeah. I've been in there a few times.
Okay, so you know how many trophies and cups there are and other awards and accolades that exist. So a lot. You have to search for it, but it's there for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, Justin, if you could just give us a little backstory on yourself, like where you're from.
Sure.
How'd you come into the Army?
Yeah. I'm originally from Colorado.
Nice.
I grew up in a little mountain town called Conifer before moving down to Littleton, and I spent most of my life there. And then I ended up moving to California for a few years, and then I was out there, and then I moved to Nevada, Arizona. And when I was in Arizona, that's when I enlisted into the Army. So I actually enlisted quite late. I was 35 when I did. And it was something that I had always been interested in doing. But up to that point, I guess it just never really like worked out. And I was just at a point in my life where I said, you know what, now's the time. I don't want to, you know, maybe they call it FOMO, fear of missing out, that sort of thing. Yes. But I didn't want to look back and go, oh, I wish I had done that. Now that I'm in, I wish I had done it sooner for sure, but I'm glad I did it at the time I did. And so, I enlisted with a Option 40 contract, and I did go to pre-RAS. Unfortunately, didn't make it through there. But and then upon going through transitions, that's when I got put to 3CR.
Okay. Yeah. So any aspirations to go back to RASP 1?
I think at this point, I would probably go SF. I loved my time in pre-RASP. I like to suffer a little bit, like those physical demanding exercises and just pushing yourself mentally and physically is kind of what I strive off of. So I think that worked out really well for me, along with Trooper of the Year as well, because it's kind of that same concept. I think with my age, I think SF might be a better path. The guys in regiment are, you know, I think the average age is somewhere around like 25. And while I can keep up, the longevity there is really not quite there. So I think there's probably more opportunity in SF. Although I would like to go to Ranger School.
If I could be like King for a day, I would just plan out this perfect glide path for you to go one, to go to Ranger School, promote to E6, and then go to RASP 2,
I thought about that.
I mean, it's a different course than RASP 1 is, as you know. I did RASP 2 like 3 months after Ranger School, and it's like a gentleman's course compared to Ranger School, but it's nevertheless, it's more mentally and challenging than anything else. So, but the 18 X-ray route, that's a noble route to take as well. Mm-hmm. And clearly you possess the mental maturity and wherewithal to make the right decision. You married, kids, any of that?
No. I am divorced. That was actually one of the reasons I like to, everybody asked me like, oh, why'd you join so late? And I was like, I don't know, midlife crisis. I went through a divorce and I just kind of didn't really know what I was doing. And I said, you know, needed a little bit of direction and sent it. So, yeah.
I'm confident that I'm older than you, but I feel like we have very or somewhat similar glide paths, somewhat similar stories with regards to how we came into the Army. I mean, I was 31 when I commissioned.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, I've been a commissioned officer for 18 years now, so I'm 50, but somewhat similar, almost like a midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. Obviously, chaplains don't come into the Army unless they feel called by God to do that. And I was in full-time ministry, but realized I was not going to do that the rest of my life. Were you in the middle of something that, other than the personal stuff?
Yeah.
Were you in the middle of a career, or was it nothing that was?
No, it was transitional. Okay. I had spent before that 6 or 7 years as in a bike shop, like bicycles.
Yeah.
And I was managing a store out in California before I left. And I mean, it was fun. It's very free and you get to do like, you just have a lot of freedom, I guess.
Yeah.
But at the same time, while you did get that, it wasn't very fulfilling to me. You know, I had accomplished quite a bit and I had done really well in the store and I grew it quite a bit. And I ended up going through the pandemic and there was a big bicycle boom. So everybody was buying bikes and, you know, I worked through all that. But at the end of the day, I think something was missing and I knew it. And in the company I was working for, I just didn't feel that there was a lot of movement for me to go up. And even in the positions that were opening up, none of them really like appealed to me. And I was like, I don't really know if I want to do that. And I think it was just kind of a catalyst a little bit from going through the divorce. And then I quit the job and then moved out of California. And it was just like kind of this big snowball effect that just kind of like pushed me forward.
So I think this may drive the majority of our discussion today. So you join the Army, you apply for an Option 40 contract, RASP doesn't work out, you get diverted to 3rd Cavalry Regiment. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was like even on your radar at all.
I had no idea.
Okay. Was it just like at that point needs of the Army?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yep. So they sent you here, 11, I'm sure 11 Bravo?
Actually 11 Charlie.
11 Charlie. Yep. Okay.
Mortars, for those that don't
know. Yeah, yep, mortars. So they diverted you here. You came to 3rd Cavalry Regiment. Personally, I love this place. Mm-hmm. I have really enjoyed my time here. This was not the first place on my list when it came time to PCS, but I've really enjoyed it. For you, however, you didn't necessarily get what you want. You're trying to find yourself in many ways. Has this met that need in your life, or is it a process that you're going through of seeing the Army meet certain needs in your life?
I think it has in ways, and other ways it hasn't. I'm a pretty motivated individual, and sometimes I feel this, you know, could use a little bit more. So I try to do that. And some of the people around maybe just kind of lack that. I mean, at the end of the day, it is what you make it. I had no idea, you know, who or what 3CR was when I got those orders. They were just like, okay, you're going to, you know, at the time Fort Cavazos, now Fort Hood. And I was like, okay. I mean, for me, there's one thing that I always look for. It's there's actually a piece of scripture that I use a lot. I'll let the Lord fill my cup, and it's not like not what I want, but what he wants. And he has a path for me, and and I'm going to continue to follow that and walk that path that he has for me. I was definitely pretty bummed when I was dropped from RASP. I had told myself, like, the only way that I'm leaving this place is like if they say you can't be here anymore. But I did everything I could to make it, and it just wasn't, you know, that wasn't the path that he had for me. And so while I was pretty sad, I just tried to accept it and take it in stride, and now I'm here.
Yeah. I would call that entering into this phase of not being dismayed by not getting what you want. I frequently, when I was in the 82nd, I would run into like 18 x-ray drops, and they did not want to be there. And it's ironic because they really didn't know what they didn't know about the Army to begin with. Very similar situation. They thought they wanted this. They, for whatever reason, they did not achieve that, even though they really had no concept of like what SFAS was. I mean, let's be honest, when you're 18, 19, you don't know anything about the Army, even if you think you do. And so they don't get that. They come to the 82nd. They don't know anything about the 82nd. They don't know anything about the lineage, the history, like our mission set. pretty incredible. For them, they would see it as not even close to being a consolation prize to what they aspired to. But when you really dig deep, places like the 82nd, places like 3CR have an incredible history, an incredible mission set should we ever get spun up to go fight the next giant war. So you have come here and you've set an example, I would say, for others to follow by the things that you have achieved. When you look at your foxhole, like where you're at, the people that you influence, are you a team leader now or where?
Squad leader.
Squad leader. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you're a squad leader. So you have influence over what, 6 to 12 guys?
For mortars, it's like 6, 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have influence in their lives. What does that influence look like based upon what you have achieved thus far?
I really just try to maintain a positive attitude. Every day you're going to come into something that you don't want to do, or tasking or a detail or field problem. And I think at the end of the day is if I can maintain a good attitude and provide support for the people around me and show that, like, at the end of the day, whether it's something that you wanted to do or not, you put your best foot forward and you do it to the best of your ability. I want to be proud in everything that I do. And so I try and show my guys that same mentality, because if we all do that, then we will just continue to rise up and be the best. And I like being the best. I like to win, and I like to be at the top, and I like creating competition inside, because it raises us up, whether that's, you know, physically in like some PT comps or mentally in like challenging ourselves. But yeah, I think it's just to maintain that positive attitude and just like keep pushing forward and putting that best foot forward and try to be the best at everything you do.
We'll come back to this. I want to table this discussion for a bit. I do want to hear a little bit about Trooper of the Year competition.
Sure.
Like what were the steps required, and what were the steps involved with that process? Like, how did you prepare for it? Who came alongside you to help you prepare for that?
Yeah. It was actually kind of dropped on me. I had no idea that I was going to, and then our Sergeant Major said, "Topel, you're doing the Trooper of the Year," and I was like, okay. I didn't really have any idea what it entailed. I think the week of, like, four-ish days beforehand, I got kind of the con op of like what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I read over it and I was like, okay, sounds good. Let's go. You know, I made sure over the weekend that like my packing list was good and I had everything, so I wasn't missing anything. And then just showed up in the morning and just kind of ready to go. You know, I didn't have like a lot of preparation. I relied kind of a little bit on just the fitness and everything I'd had before. I knew that there was going to be some tests or a test, like a written test, and then there was going to be an oral board. I, you know, tried to make sure like I studied up a little bit on that beforehand. And then day of, they had like a layout in the morning, which you were docked points, like if you didn't have everything or and that sort of thing. And then after that, we completed an AFT, which was pretty fun. We did that in OCPs and boots, so that was interesting. I took a couple tumbles though, if anybody was there on the sprint drag carry when you're doing the side shuffle. I was coming back and I just like I couldn't pick up my right leg well enough, and I just tumbled over and rolled up, man. Got back up and then rolled over again. and just kept going. So it was pretty interesting. I had fun though. I mean, I enjoy that sort of thing. You just laugh it off. After that, we donned our rucks and then we kind of separated into our groups, like the junior enlisted NCOs and warrant officers. And then we went, and we had two guides, chaperones, whatever you want to call them, that went. And then so we essentially just kind of did the spur ride that was happening. And I think originally we were supposed to get some grade sheets, but I don't know like what happened with that, because we were supposed to be graded at each event, but that didn't end up happening. So we just kind of did the spur ride. Maybe not quite to the extent that others were. They definitely probably didn't hound us as much as the people doing the spur ride. So we had some, I think rucks were like around 45, 50-ish pounds. We were in Flick, and it was hot that day too.
It was.
Yeah.
They put us in the woods.
It was pretty brutal.
Yeah. Did the spur ride. We were like in the woods for like 4 hours for the heat to pass.
I was torn on that one, because we'd gone to our first station and then we had gone to the second station. I think at that point we were 10 miles out or something, because I think we did a total of 26, 28 miles rucking. And by the time we got to the second station, there was talk of like a stand down. Our group kind of voted on whether we should just stay where we were at and just wait for that stand down or move. And I wanted to move because I think that actually kind of hindered us a little bit. We were stagnant for so long that like our bodies kind of started, you know, like, oh, okay, we're done. We're in recovery mode. And then having to pick up after that and go.
Yes.
I was struggling when we picked back up. Like my body was like, oh, all right, here we're doing it again. Even though it was hot out, I kind of wish we had kept going and just maybe slowed the pace as much as possible, taking a little bit more breaks, but just at least kept that continuous movement. But yeah, we did that. The first station was artillery, so we were running artillery rounds back and forth and getting up on the gun, which was interesting because it's similar but different to mortars. But I got to mess around with that a little bit. It was fun, and I mean, honestly, my favorite part was running the rounds back and forth because it was just heavy and and I enjoy that sort of stuff. Yeah. But and then after that, we did a medical lane, so some like buddy carries and low crawl, high crawl, and sending up a nine line. And then, yeah, that's when we had the break. And then after that, we moved to the next one. Oh, it was the javelin plus low crawl, high crawl. That actually was put on by our squadron. And there were some guys from my troop there, and they were definitely, they were rooting for me, but they were also making it hard at the same time.
Sure.
So that was pretty fun. But that movement from that second to that third one was the longest one because we hiked out the north or northeast side. And we did this big loop around, and that sun was beating down on us. And I remember a couple of times, like, I wanted to throw up a little bit because it was just, it was hot. And so I was just trying to take fuel on as much as possible and drink water. One of the other guys, he was like, yeah, I got to stop for a second. And I was like, oh, I didn't want to be the one to say it, but he was like, oh, I got to stop for a second. And I mean, all the guys I were with, we all made it through. So, I mean, that was awesome to see. Like, we didn't have anybody drop, which was awesome that we all kind of pushed together and made it. So,
how many people did you compete against? Was it like one
four
from every?
Four or five, I think. There were four or five of us in ours. Yeah. Yeah, I think there was originally supposed to be one from, like, Saber, Thunder, Tiger, Mule Skinner. I'm pretty sure there were a total of
four junior or five.
Yeah,
for that category.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I felt pretty good, to be honest. I thought the ruck weight was going to be the hardest part, but I mean, after a certain point, you just kind of tune it out, and your shoulders just kind of, there is what it is, and you just keep going.
Sure.
My feet were definitely hurting towards the end. And then, you know, after we did the third one, the movements between the third and the fifth one, so those three, four, five, were pretty small. It was within like maybe 2 or 3 miles of each other. So they were short movements. And then we did one with Mule Skinner moving some tow bars back and forth. And then the last one was a Seaburn. So we were low crawling, putting in the Seaburn device and then moving it. Yep, yeah. Low crawling back. So, and then we did some kettlebell carries as well, donning our masks in time and that sort of thing. So, I mean, I had fun. That sort of stuff is just enjoyable to me. And when you can push yourself and go and work through the pain,
right?
I think that's
makes you stronger.
Yes,
yeah. Not just physically, but overall.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, getting back to what we were talking about earlier with regards to your team, your squad. So you aspire to do hard things and to push through those things, which is good because I always tell people in the Army, we're LARPing, we're live action role playing
100%.
until we're in every scenario, even Ranger School is a giant LARP, but it's a hard one. But we do all this training. We try to make it hard so that when we get to an actual combat environment, we're tested, we're steely-eyed, and we're ready to fight whatever enemy the president decides that we need to be at war with. Mm-hmm. So clearly, you're an example of somebody who, given the right circumstances, if we had to deploy, you would be ready to employ mortars against the enemy. You have a squad now, and I know that like there are people who get discouraged by little things in this environment, even just being here. How do you, other than modeling, like you said, just positivity and strength and endurance, modeling what it's like to improve upon skills that you have physically, mentally, what do you do for those troopers that you engage with that just can't get past a certain barrier?
Yeah. I like to know their motivation. Why'd you join the Army? What do you want to accomplish? once you kind of understand, you know, where they come from a little bit and maybe a little bit the way their mind works, I adjust to each individual because not everybody needs the same thing. So understanding like this person, I have one soldier, when we're doing the sprint drag carry, you know, she likes to yell at her to like keep moving and like keep going. So she likes that sort of like motivation, you know, where other people are just, they're a little more chill and just maybe like a one-on-one talk of like, hey, what's going on? And this is how we can move through this and that sort of thing. And understanding their mentality, I think is huge. So I think it really just comes down to knowing who your soldiers are and like understanding what they need to continue to move forward through these hurdles. And I also try to lead by example. So like if there's something small that we have to do, but yeah, it's frustrating, like I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to do it with them. So I think that helps kind of create some camaraderie. And if they go, oh, like he'll do it, then I can do it. And we try to get it done like as fast as possible. So then it's done. I think that's another one. It's like, hey, if we get this something that we don't want to do, or it's frustrating and it's like, oh, this sucks and I don't want to be here. It's like, oh, cool. Well, you know, if we just get out there and we get it done, then we don't have to think about it or worry about it anymore. And just kind of trying to instill that in them. And like, I mean, there's plenty of things that I don't want to do, but sure. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm here. And again, like I said earlier, like I just want to do it to the best of my ability.
And I imagine as well that you're thinking beyond yourself. Like you honestly have to think about the organization, even at echelon. So maybe you're thinking about it within your section, within the mortar section, or you're thinking about the greater mission of Thunder Squadron, or you're thinking about how might the regiment be employed by division to carry out a mission in like the Indo-PACOM region, which is how I try and look at something like a Korea rotation. Mm-hmm. Is like, we're not just going over there to be in garrison, but away from our families in Korea. Like we're actually being used by Indo-PACOM as an element that exists at the tip of the spear in the event that North Korea decides they want to pop one off against South Korea. Like we're there as a reactionary force to deter a northern aggressor that is unpredictable right now. So I think a lot of it is how you package something. Mm-hmm. If we package things like, yes, I got to go to another MORTEP, or I got to go through another squad gunnery or a platoon gunnery live fire, I'm going to lose my mind. You have to look at the bigger picture of what we do in order to draw some degree of motivation. So a lot of our job, I think, as leaders is to help junior enlisted or younger leaders see outside of their own way of thought that often is self-discouragement. Do you see that more often than not? Because the reason I ask that question is it's very easy for us to look out across a formation and say, yeah, 50% of the formation is discouraged. We can say that a disproportionate number of our formation is affected by the small amount of SIRs that we have, the small amount of problem children that we have. And we tend to fixate upon that versus really focusing in on the other 80 or 90% that really is doing the right thing.
Right.
So do you see that as a struggle that we have as an organization? Do you think that's something more endemic of the Army as a whole?
I would say it's probably even bigger than that. But yeah, I definitely think we tend to look at the negatives of something far more than the positives. And even if the negatives make up such a small portion, I think it's good to acknowledge that, but it's more important to focus on, okay, yeah, that might have happened or this is what's going on, but look at everything else that we're doing that's working or that we're doing well, we're being the best at. And I think it goes back to that positivity. You have to acknowledge the bad, but you don't want to hyperfixate on that and like fall into that well of, oh, you know, this happened or we're the worst or I don't like where I'm at. You can acknowledge that this is bad or this is happening, but then you have to look at everything. There's a bigger picture. And I think that goes back to what you're saying with, you know, motivating and being like, oh, well, look at the big picture of like what we're doing and how we can be an asset to the regiment division in that regard. To you got to look outside of yourself.
So when you look laterally across let's just say the Thunder formation at your peers in the different sections, like your squad leaders, do they share your sentiment when it comes to how the need really to motivate soldiers. I sometimes wonder if there's a disconnect, again, at echelon when it comes to squad leader, platoon sergeant, and certainly amongst NCOs and officers sometimes with regards to what is really being communicated, what the culture really exists at that level versus what we think.
There are some squad leaders out there that I think embody the same thing that I do when it comes to being the best and motivating. I can definitely look across the formation and even in the other troops inside of Thunder Squadron, and I can pick out guys that it's like, yeah, he gets after it. He wants to be at the best and he wants to win. So there's definitely that around. And I actually think I see it more now once I've stepped into this role. Like as when I was a specialist and kind of looking up a little bit, you know, I saw some, and maybe it was just like finally pinning five and just kind of being in the, on that same level, you attract more of your peers in that regard. So you're a little bit more open to it. But yeah, once I stepped up, I was like, oh yeah, like he's a good dude. Like he definitely gets after it. And like looking in at somebody else, like, yeah, I definitely see it. I definitely, there's some people out there that maybe were pushed hard to get up into that role. But I think for the most part, the squad leaders I know are all pretty fired up. And same with the team leaders too, I would say. I see some strong individuals out there. And that just motivates me too, to see other guys that are like, yeah, you know, like I want to be the best and climb up and do that and that sort of thing. So everywhere you're going to see people, they're just like, oh, no, nah, I don't really care, you know, and that sort of thing. That's going to happen everywhere. But I try to surround myself with other people that are like-minded or trying to motivate those maybe that aren't. It may be a little bit of a mixed bag for sure on, you know, whether they are pushing forward or they're just kind of like, oh, okay, I'm like here and like I got the position. But every squad leader I know of in our troop, solid. Like yeah. I like all those guys and they definitely get fired up and like ready to push. So
that's good. Well, you have, since coming here, you've been afforded some great opportunities to excel. You've been rewarded for your abilities when it comes to excelling and competing and rising to the occasion, going above and beyond some of your peers in the case of Trooper of the Year. Your whole time in 3CR, I'm sure, will act as a platform for future experiences and opportunities within the Army that you can build upon, which is great. That's, I think, how every Army career should be. These are all stepping stones. Every previous assignment we have, we are building upon towards something else until our time in the Army is done and they no longer need us.
Yeah.
With that being said, think about now your time in 3CR. Think about that new trooper who has zero baseline in terms of experience within the Army. What would you say to that incoming soldier, that 11 Charlie, or that, you know, the 11 Bravo that's coming to Thunder Squadron, to make sure that they're like, their head is in the right place as soon as possible?
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, take every opportunity you get. Every door that opens, power through that thing. Like I love the phrase violence of action, and that's how I try to do a lot of what I do in my career, is just like, as soon as I see something or an opportunity opens, I'm getting after it as hard as I can. And I think kind of setting that tone when they first get here of like, be motivated, take every opportunity or door that opens and make the best of everything that comes your way, I think kind of sets them up for some success, because it's like, you know, the next opportunity that arrives, I go, oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Let me do this. Let me do this school, or let me get into this position. Like, it maybe helps you fight a little bit harder for mortars. Like, first you're an AB, and then you're an AG, and then you're a gunner and squad leader. So it's like, yeah, you start at the bottom, but if you have that motivation as soon as you get there to like, oh, let me collect all this information, I want to be knowledgeable, I want to understand what we do, and take that initiative right off the bat to climb your way up and maybe beat some of the people that have been there longer out of a job, I support that. If you want to be the best, you're going to be rewarded for it.
It helps to come into the Army with a competitive mindset.
Yeah.
Fact. I totally agree with you. But I think you also, based upon the positions you mentioned about first and AB, an ammo bearer,
which
is not a very gratifying position. There's nothing glorious about being an ammo bearer unless you just like to lift heavy things. And then from there, graduating to being like an assistant gunner and then a gunner.
Yeah.
there's a process that you have to go through just to reach those positions. It doesn't necessarily take a lot of time, mm-hmm. but you have to have the patience to take that lowly position
yep.
and then go successively to each position before you get to where you really want. So mm-hmm. it's not just about being competitive, although I think competition can probably speed up the process of going from like an AB to a gunner, but it also requires patience mm-hmm. as well. And perhaps a degree of humility, because mm-hmm. ideally the assistant gunner, the gunner knows more than the AB does.
Right.
So if you come in with an ego or a chip on your shoulder and you get the gunner who just like totally crushes you because you're being an idiot, you have to accept that
yeah.
and learn from that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So yes, I think if you could summarize the mindset of coming into like a force comm unit or combat arms unit, it is competition. Again, I totally agree with you. The Army rewards you for competition and being willing to learn with a humble mm-hmm. spirit.
Absolutely.
And you'll do well.
I got a great piece of advice one time, and he told me everybody starts in the same place. And that was humbling, because I always want to jump ahead maybe sometimes, but everybody starts in the same place. And I was like, oh, and it took me a little while to kind of understand that. And I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, I have to start here. You learn that humility, like you were saying, and then you can continue to move forward. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I imagine that would be a hard pill to swallow, being in your 30s and there's like some 19-year-old kid right next to you, and you guys are like both going through basic training together.
Yeah, it was
both
interesting.
Like getting onboarded at 3CR together. I'm like, we have not had the same experience as you and I.
Definitely.
So, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sergeant Topel, I appreciate you yeah. coming on to the show.
Absolutely.
And really enjoyed the conversation. How much more time is left on your contract?
I have just under 2 years. I just hit the halfway mark in July, end okay. of July.
Yeah. So did you go to Korea
yep.
So you're going back?
Yep, again. Going back again.
Okay.
Yep. Absolutely.
Wow. So, all right. Well, yeah. Good times.
Thank you very much for having me, sir.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. That was a great interview with Sergeant Topel, an 11 Charlie squad leader over at Thunder Squadron. Great to have him join us this week. If you have liked what you've heard over the last several episodes, I encourage you to hit the like button. Feel free to leave comments with your favorite streaming service. And look forward to having you back here for the next episode of Legends Among Us. Aiyah.